Please come to order. This morning, it's Wednesday, February 20th, 2013. Time is 8:02. Members present, myself, Senator Stevens, Chair, Senate President Huggins, as well as Senator Gardner. So we'll go ahead with business. Today, under bills previously heard, we also have Senator Dunleavy with us. We'll take up Senate Bill 40, which makes appropriations for engineering facilities at the University of Alaska Anchorage and also the Fairbanks campuses. Following that, there'll be a presentation by the University of Alaska Anchorage Center for Alaska Education Policy and Research, known as CAPER. This is the second hearing of Senate Bill 40. My intention today is to move the bill on to the next committee of referral. We have the sponsor of the bill present, the university personnel available for questions. We have not yet closed public testimony, so if there are others wishing to offer their testimony on this bill, you will still have the opportunity to do that. At this time, I'd like to ask for a motion to adopt the bill before we before us as a working document.
So moved.
Thank you. Senator Huggins has moved that we adopt Senate Bill 40, version 28LS0083/A as our working document. And I'll object for purpose of discussion and call upon the bill sponsor to come forward, please, if you will, to make any further presentations on the matter. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Moser, staff to Senator Ellis. I'd like to thank the committee on behalf of Senator Ellis. I'd like to thank the committee for their time and attention to this matter, and make myself and Kit Duke of University statewide facilities available for questions.
Well, thank you very much. We've talked about this a lot. Any questions anybody has or concerns at this time?
Well,
yes, Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The number of students that are this year are in engineering programs in Anchorage and the number in Fairbanks?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, just one moment. I believe I have that. Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I see 1,137 students statewide at both campuses, and we can. Can check in with Kit Duke online, Mr. Chairman, to see if she has that figure available, breakdown between the two campuses.
Okay, thank you. Kit Duke, are you with us? No one's online.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gardner.
I'm looking online. The School of Engineering's webpage reports present enrollment of nearly 1,200 students, and it doesn't have a date on it, but.
Yeah, that's total, right?
Well, this is the UAA School of Engineering.
1,200.
Yeah, I was asking for
UAA each. School of Engineering, since millennia, students choosing UAA have increased over 450% to a present enrollment of nearly 1,200 students, 90% of whom are Alaskan residents.
Right. So the question remains about Fairbanks.
Okay. Senator Huggins, we'll get the answer to that before we close things out. Any other questions from the committee? If not, we'll go to additional public testimony and come back to the committee for any questions you have. So, thank you for being with us. Are there any questions from the public? Any public testimony anyone care to present at this time? Do we have anybody online? Very well, then. We'll close the public hearing and go back to the committee. Further discussion. Have we found the answer, Senator Gardner, to the Fairbanks numbers?
Not quite yet, okay. Mr. Chair.
We'll take a break at ease. Senator Education, you ready to come back to order, please? And Senator Ellis' staff has an answer to the question.
Senator Huggins, through the chair, thanks for your question. Based on the statewide total and a split of about 60% of the students in Fairbanks and 40% in Anchorage, looks about to be about 682 students at UAF and 454 in Anchorage, and that's undergraduate engineering students.
Right. 682 UAF, 454 Anchorage undergraduate. Senator Huggins.
Mr. Chairman, number one, I and a number of other people in this room, I think, support the development of the engineer program, and I certainly won't object to what we're doing here today. But I would remind committee members and the sponsor of this bill, at some point in time, we'll be talking about deficits. And so you can't ask to spend $100 million in one place and then start complaining about deficits or not saving money later on. So I just hope we are congruent in our thought process.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just also a brief comment. three projects alone for the university total over 300 and some plus million dollars. And along with Senator Huggins, it's going to go through finance, and we'll have a much more robust discussion on the actual financing, operating costs, long-term liability for the state. But it's going to be difficult to fund everything that everyone wants. Actually, it's probably impossible. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Of course, we are the Education Committee. Our goal is to figure out what's good for the students of Alaska and to hope the Finance Committee can figure out what to do about it. We understand your hands are tied in many ways and limited, but I appreciate the fact that this committee seems to appear to believe that this is a good project. Whether we can afford it or not is another question. Any further comments from the members? Yes,
yep, if I could, Mr. Chairman. This is a little bit of an extrapolation, but I remind all of us where the money for this comes from, called oil and decline. And, you know, some of us are leading an effort and participating in an effort to try to turn that around so that we don't have this serious conversation about what we can afford. We just can be happy with glee because we have more production and the price is right. And we just build three buildings for the engineers and two for the economics area. But we, you know, we just can't ask for one thing and then, you know, be resistant to others when it's just for resistance. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Certainly understand that. Appreciate those comments. Any further comments before we close this matter out? Then I would remove my objection to adopting the bill and ask for a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations.
Yes, so moved.
Thank you. Senator Huggins' motion is to move Senate Bill 40, Version A, from committee with individual recommendations. Is there objection? Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 40, Version A, is moved from committee with individual recommendations. We'll now take a brief at ease to allow the committee members to sign the committee report that will be passed around, and this will give us a couple minutes for the CAPR folks to prepare for their presentation. We've had Committee back to order. Pleased to have the folks from CAPR here. Would you introduce yourself and make your presentation? Thank you.
Yes. Good morning, and thank you very much. My name is Diane Hirschberg. That's DianeHirshberg, and I am the director of the UAA Center for Alaska Education Policy Research. And I have with me a colleague from Education Northwest, Terry Akey, T-E-R-R-I-A-K-E-Y, and I'm going to have Terry Akey talk about collaboration that we have that also involves the legislature and the Department of Education and other educational entities after I talk just a short while about what CAPER is doing.
Thank you.
So we wanted to have this opportunity just to present a little bit of information because I know some of you are new to this committee, and I have met with the Education Committee members in prior, actually last session, but we just wanted to fill you in. CAPER was founded by the University of Alaska in 2010 with an we were given some of the UA Foundation money to get started. And last year, the legislature was generous enough to give us an appropriation to do some research. In addition to that, of course, we are doing contracts and grants research of the nature that we've been doing at ICER for a number of years. Many of you are familiar with our educator supply and demand work and the work we've done on geographic cost differential in schools and so forth. But there was a recognition at the university that there was no single place within the state that policymakers could look to for information about policy issues, problems, questions, research needed. So we brought forth that proposal, and it was supported by President Hamilton and then President Gamble. And you've got information that talks a little bit about our mission, our core values, the activities that we're engaged in addition to research of the sort that comes with contracts, grants, or appropriations from the legislature, we also do kind of the faster, rapid response, and we're hoping to be able to continue that, where if you have a question, an immediate question, you need a couple-week turnaround, you can call us for that. We have been funding faculty across the three campuses to try to encourage more policy research across the schools and colleges of education. We are, again, collaborating with partners in the lower 48 to make sure that our work is grounded in national research and that we are abreast of what we need to know in terms of keeping our research current and well-informed. And we are trying to build research capacity in other ways in our partnerships across the state, mentoring undergraduate researchers. We're going to have a postdoc visitor or pre-doctoral visitor from Greenland in the fall. So, again, trying to build our network and our capacity and also the capacity across the state. Specifically in terms of the work we're doing under the legislative appropriation, I have to apologize that when I put this together, I realized not everything here is actually funded through your appropriation, but in some cases it's work in response to legislative requests. Specifically, and you'll hear a bit more about this next week when the university presents the report on Alaska's University for Alaska's Teachers, the study of recent graduates of UA programs. And that came from a question last year about why only 40 to 50% of our teaching graduates were in the classroom after the first year. And so we actually talked with graduates from the last 2 years, and what they told us was kind of what we expected to hear, but it was good to have the confirmation. Our graduates, you know, are not necessarily mobile. If they're Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau-based, then they have families. They're not interested necessarily in going out to rural communities. We know that there's been not much hiring and even some layoffs in our large districts. Plus, turnover's just low. Teachers in Juneau don't want to leave Juneau. So, you know, people have to wait a couple of years before they get jobs. And there's some other factors involved. And so that is in the report you'll get next week. But that was paid for out of UA Foundation funds. We are, the first product that you all will be seeing shortly is a State of the State. And that is, we're trying to put together critical data on K-12 education in one place that is going to help you make decisions. And we, the information is available, but to have to, you know, dig through reports from a number of agencies and entities can be time consuming, and you know, our hope is also to contextualize it by bringing in the national research. So if we're looking at student achievement data, then we're also looking at how Alaska sits within the national context. If we're looking at our policies on instructional calendar, days, hours, minutes, and so forth, again, we're looking at the national context. And we're hoping this is something that's accessible, the way many of you have used the Kids Count report that is produced also at ICER, that it's an accessible report that gives you the data at your fingertips. So that we're aiming for the end of March. We're also engaged in a statewide survey of teachers to try to understand really what's affecting their decisions to stay or leave. And the focus is primarily rural Alaska. We'll work with one urban district just for the purpose of comparing the difference in the conditions in urban and rural Alaska, and also because we do think that's an important part of the question is what are the conditions urban teachers are facing, since large numbers of our students are taught in these schools. But really, we all know the question is, why are our rural teachers leaving or staying? And so this is going to be the first comprehensive look, not just at Exeters, which is studies that have been done in the past, but at those who are choosing to stay, as well as those who are choosing to leave. We're also looking at the cost of teacher turnover. So in other words, what does it cost when we lose these teachers? Because it's an enormous expense, particularly for our rural districts, but we've never quantified it. And so we're looking across six districts in the state, varying sizes, varying funding sources, because we think there may be a difference if it's one of the districts that is fully state funded versus has a lot of, you know, local funds or federal impact aid. And then we've got just our update on our supply and demand report, which is also funded to a great extent from UA K-12 outreach programs. And the other piece that's not on here, but which has been a source of conversation the last 2 days as we've met with legislators, is to, and it's also something the Anchorage School District is funding us to start work on in their district, is to look at how districts are spending their money. So to really dig into the ways that districts allocate their funding in terms of their instructional programs, in terms of administration and so forth. And to also, again, look at what the national research says is best practices in terms of allocations of resources and the outcomes you want to see. It's a tough link to make. We know that the research on production functions does not say you can conclusively say, if I invest, you know, $100,000 here, I'm going to see this increase in student learning. But there still is research that says investments made in this area, you know, whether it's professional development within schools, whether it's any number of factors, do align with better outcomes. And so we want to look across a sample of rural districts as well as a sample of urban districts and see how do they use their funding and how does that mesh with what the research is telling us we should be doing. So that's a lot of our big projects, and again, we have contracts and grants. We're evaluating things ranging from math based on the UPIC way of learning, Jerry Lipka's project, the Teaching American History grant in the Anchorage School District, number of projects that are grant-based, but we thought we should share what you're supporting us to do. And then the other thing we're very excited about is working with the Alaska State Policy Research Alliance. And so with the permission of the chair, I'd like to ask Terry Aki to give you a little bit of information on that.
Certainly. Thank you, Dr. Hirschberg. Any questions before we move on?
Yes.
Yes, Senator
thank
Gardner.
You. Before we shift a little bit, if I were going to try to figure out what really works in a school district, I would probably look at school districts that have the best outcomes and say, how do these differ from struggling school districts? Do we do that anywhere systematically?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that's a conversation we had yesterday with one of the representatives. We have not systematically looked at how districts that are more successful differ from those who are less successful. One of our goals with this, how districts spend their money, is to actually intentionally select rural districts that have higher student outcomes and those that are less successful, so that we can actually look at the allocation of resources. One of the things that's happening right now is an opportunity to refocus the intent language for what we need to do next year. And so I actually think that's a really important question, and I have encouraged the representative Wilson, who we talked with yesterday, Representative T. Wilson, and I would encourage you and any of the other senators interested in looking at this to actually be involved in that conversation. And I know Representative Osterman is one of the key people that's going to be crafting this language, and Pete Eklund in his office. So because really we will be doing this research as best we can following the intent language.
I see. And Senator Gardner, if you are follow up on that.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. So you need the language changed in the grant funding?
Through the chair. No, actually the intent funding, which you have a copy of in front of you, and it's language that was intended to cast a wide net, and also there were some specific underlying intent under there, which honestly we missed, and we're not able to clarify that language as we were launching into some of our research last year. And so we've had some good conversations about how to focus that intent language so that it more clearly directs us to do what you believe we need to be doing.
Thank you. Senator Huggins.
Thank you. And if to follow up on Senator Gardner's question, which I think is an important one, and this is a Hugginsism, so it's not necessarily true, it's just the way I believe. We're looking at a system that we've had for a long time. And some of us think that one of the things is that we have to either have a revolutionary or an evolutionary process to change that system. Mm-hmm. And I remind all of us that it hadn't been too long ago that UAF lost its teacher, I think it was UAF, lost its teacher certification, right? Symptomatic of a challenge, it goes through generations of, because it just didn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And I will use the analogy of the Olympics. You know, once upon a time, we just took students out of high schools and out off college campuses, we sent them off to the International Olympic venue, and they did pretty good. And then we suddenly realized that internationally, people had refined training for the Olympics. We now have an Olympic training center. We evolve because they have a stopwatch. At the 100 meters, they say, doop. They have a camera at the end that says, this guy won, that guy was second, or the lady, and on and on and on. Very sophisticated because that's the way the system evolved. And someone asked me yesterday from the NEA, says, well, why are you talking about school choice? Why do you think that's a good idea? And I said, look, politicians that just have a good idea and start pursuing them won't last very long. It's because constituents mm-hmm. have an interest. And my point is the constituents that I'm hearing from, and if you look at some of the statistics that I've seen, whether it be remedial training that goes to the UAA system overall, or dropout rate, or non-completion, or international venues, you know, we're kind of sinking a little bit as an understatement. So I would encourage us, not too far down the line, to look at how we are going to evolve. Otherwise, there's going to be a call for a major movement. Because, I'm listening to the constituency that I have, Senator Dunleavy has, that says, hey, guys, this isn't working for us. And I think if you check in Matt Sue, the fastest growing demographic of students is in correspondence mm-hmm. and online courses growth industry. So But your thoughts on that, because am I wrong that we're just examining the same system?
Through the chair, Senator, to some extent, yes, we are absolutely examining the existing system, although, again, part of our goal is to say, and now let's look at what's happening elsewhere, what's been proven to be more effective. You know, we should be asking. Alaska is unique in our geography and our challenges, and we know that. So when we look to states such as Connecticut that have very high achievement, we have to also say, yeah, but they're, you know, geographically they don't have the challenges. They are not necessarily more homogeneous, but they definitely have a much more common experience across the state for many more years. That said, there are things to be learned from what they are doing. There are things to be learned from what's happening internationally in places that have similar challenges. That's something we spent a little bit of time doing prior to this funding, but looking at places with large indigenous populations that seem to be having some success. I mean, Hawaii, actually, if you look at what's happening with Hawaii Native students, there's a lot of success. And they have a very well-funded private Hawaii Native serving school, Kamehameha, which has then generated public charter schools that are working in that model. So there's some interesting things that we can bring to that conversation. And one thing that we actually spoke with Senator Dunleavy and some other representatives about is maybe if we can find some external funding, hosting a conversation this summer about some of these questions on choice and charter schools and other options out there. And let's get things out on the table and have that conversation, because there is an enormous amount of interest around this state at looking at what are alternatives to the current status quo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I agree with you. And your point is exactly my point. Our demographics are different to a number degree. And that's why I believe that when you look at our demographics, that we do have to tailor ourselves to the students that we have. Mm-hmm. And what I see, for the most part, we've done, we just kind of taken a national model, and here it is. And by virtue of that, our kids are going, you know, they don't care about me, they don't know who I am, and I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. And we can do better than that, because I firmly believe it's easy to blame the teachers, mm-hmm. and the principals and the superintendent or the lack of money. But in fact, I believe that at least near 50% of the challenge is based on the demographics of the students that come into the school site. But that's our fault that we haven't figured that out and tailored ourselves so that we realize what they want and how we can deliver that and make it interesting enough that they hang around.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Huggins. Further discussion? Thank you, Dr. Hirschberg. Appreciate you. What you are doing, and so much. I can't believe all of the areas you are involved in. That's very impressive. Thank you so much. Let's, if you would stay here, we'll go on to Ms. Aki and ask you to make your presentation, if you will. And
yes, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee, for allowing us to have the time to speak to you. And I would like to talk to you a little bit about
I'm sorry, just for the record, would you identify yourself?
Yes, my name is Dr. Terry Aki, and I'm from Education Northwest, and my name is spelled Terriakey. About 3 years ago, I started collaborating with Dr. Hirschberg around issues of education policy. My background and training is I have a doctorate in educational research and policy analysis, and so I'm very interested in state policies around education and how those evolve over time. And out of that conversation, we were able to put together an opportunity through some of Education Northwest's funding that we have. We actually are an organization that serves the Northwest region. We serve Alaska, Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon through several of the federally funded technical assistance contracts. So one of those is what is called the Regional Educational Laboratory Contract. There are 10 of those regional educational laboratories around the country. Each serves a region of about five or six states. And the goal of that federal contract is to provide assistance to states, districts, and schools around using evidence and building research and analytic capacity in the state to use the data that they have available for them for making decisions. So that's essentially the bottom line goal of that. We also administer the Comprehensive Center contract, which is another federal contract that provides support to the State Department. So through that contract, we have a lot of technical assistance that's provided to the department and works with Mr. Morse, for example, in terms of looking at ways that that contract can help support different programs, different things that are happening across the state. But through that REL contract, that Regional Educational Lab contract, we had the opportunity to put together a really unique kind of piece of work. The REL contract in its current configuration is using the concept of what we call a research alliance to actually help build capacity in the education field to use information and evidence and data to make good decisions. This is a shift from previous contracts that tended to be much more external. Researchers were much more separated from the field. They would generate projects and then go out and find somebody that was interested in them, as opposed to the other way around. Through the Research Alliance model, we actually bring together a group of constituents or stakeholders who have a problem of educational practice that they're interested in looking at and want more evidence about, would like to research. And we work through that entity to develop research studies, build capacity about how to use data, provide a lot of support about pulling data together, helping researchers and decision makers talk to each other in ways that both understand, and that sort of thing. We have 9 of these alliances across our region of 5 states, but this is the one that's in Alaska, and it's called the Alaska Statewide Education Policy Alliance. So it's around looking at statewide policy related to education. It's very unique in its form. Many of the alliances that are funded through the REL in this contract are district and school and some state agency alliances. This one, though, is much broader than that. It is an alliance that brings together CAPR as the Policy Research Center, the Department of Education, the legislature, the governor's office, superintendents, and many outside organizations that have a stake in education to come together and begin to have conversations about what is it that we want to solve in terms of education issues in Alaska. This is the second year of a 5-year contract. The first year was spent engaging many stakeholders. In fact, we were involved with your predecessors on the Senate Education Committee and on the House side prior to the election, and this is an opportunity for us to come talk to you and let you know what's happening. And that was involved in getting people on board, trying to talk about ideas about what we could come together around to talk about with data. Because one of the challenges that we have in using data, there's so many educational problems out there that it sort of gets diffuse, and we're trying to find information here and information here. And this approach is much more targeted. So what emerged out of those conversations was that there would be a focus on looking at college and career readiness and post-secondary transitions for Alaska students, with a specific focus on Alaska Native students. So there's a kind of an overview of what does this look like for all students in Alaska, and then what are some of the different needs that Alaska Native students have. We are currently involved in doing a study which is going to be looking at the trajectories of students as they leave high school and where they go in terms of college, technical school, career. And we're working with the Department of Labor, ACPE, and CAPR as collaborative partners to be able to pull together all the different sources of data that are needed to do that study. So it's a really nice example of how this effort is bringing agencies together to work together to answer some key questions. The other piece of work that we'll be doing this year is working with all of these groups to actually establish what a definition of college and career readiness is. And to have a working definition by the end of the year that can then be brought back to you all with a list of potential indicators of that we could actually assign data to, so that you could see over time whether specific programs around college and career readiness, post-secondary transition, were actually moving those needles on the dial. So it would actually, the goal is to develop some set of indicators that can be used to track progress and target specific programs so that the data can be collected around that. The core partners in this, as I said, are CAPR, the Department of Education, superintendents. We have also been very fortunate to engage the Department of Labor in this. They are very interested in developing their capacity to answer educational research questions with the data they have. Yesterday in a meeting with them, it was really nice to talk to them about their data and discover that they have data that would be really relevant for some of the questions that education has that they have not been using that way. So it's a really good opportunity to build that capacity across agencies. At the end of this five-year contract, we're hoping to be leaving the state with a set of studies that are useful for policymaking, to work with researchers in how to talk with you about getting your questions answered in a way that the communication lines are open so that you're understanding what they're telling you and they're understanding, you know, back and forth. And to have a process in place that can keep going on its own for Alaska. So the goal is to develop a model of policy decision making in the education field that can continue to sustain itself with the systems that are in place in the state and to develop that capacity. The last thing I wanted to say about this is that this particular alliance is now getting some attention at the national level in the National Regional Educational Laboratory context. So for example, recently in a national meeting, the commissioner of NCES, which is the Department of Education branch that hosts this program, actually called out this alliance and the study that we're doing and how we're working to bring together all of these different constituencies as a really good model for how this work can happen. So that it's pretty exciting that this also has an opportunity to sort of put Alaska on the map in terms of this, because this doesn't happen in other states. There aren't these kinds of consistent partnerships where all of these entities are coming together and working together to do this kind of work. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Well, thank you, Dr. Key. That's exactly the area we need to be, we need help in, and appreciate your presentation. And questions from the committee? Okay, that's questions of Dr. Hirschberg or of Dr. Key. I think you have given us a lot of information to think about, and I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Gardner.
I have a quick question for Dr. Key, and you may have said this. Will there be preliminary reports? I know you have a five-year contract. We're in year two. But along the way, will we be getting some information?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Gardner. We will be doing reports for the different studies we do. So for the study that I just mentioned, that report mm-hmm. will be coming out sometime in October. We will be coming to either Juneau or Anchorage and presenting that to the Alliance. It will also be made public. We're happy to come back and present on results that we're seeing. We will also be doing ongoing progress reporting with the Alliance about what we're doing and some of the data that we're finding. That will be shared with Senator Stevens as the kind of representative of this committee on that Alliance, and that will make sure that that's distributed out and that you have information as the work progresses.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Any information that you provide to us, Tim, we'll make sure that it's distributed to the entire committee mm-hmm. and anyone else that might be interested as well.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much. Appreciate your comments. And is there anything else coming before the committee this time? If not, we're adjourned.